Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, into your town, into your home, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of dark energy. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophony of conversation, sitting in for my colleague George Norrie, who is taking a few days off. We've got a lot of ground to cover, so buckle up and hunker down. In this half hour, we'll check out a few news stories and items of interest posted on the Coast to Coast website for your illumination and enjoyment. And those mysterious mutilators are back. Animal mutilations never really went away, but they've made a major resurgence in the Colorado Valley, where they first rose to national prominence and where the first widely publicized mute cases found their way onto the pages of respectable newspapers. 8 cows have been carved up in the San Luis Valley this year. A strange situation, as you probably are aware. No tracks, no blood. More than 10,000 cattle and other animals have been sliced up in similar fashion over the past few decades all over the world. No one's ever been caught. There are plenty of strong indications that this can't be the work, at least not entirely, of predators, no matter how many times that mantra is repeated by those who just want this mystery to go away. In just a few minutes, Chuck Zukowski, a deputy sheriff and longtime investigator for MUFON, will join us to talk about the 5 mutilation cases he has personally investigated in recent months in Colorado. Something very strange is afoot, or a hoof. I'm looking forward to hearing Chuck's take on who or what is behind this. And then in hour 2, really looking forward to this, highly respected aviation journalist William Scott, Bill Scott, will be here to talk about how and why the world might end. He's written a follow-up to his successful book, Space Wars, The First 6 Hours of World War III. The new one is called Counter Space, The Next Hours of World War III. And although it's a novel, the story is based on Bill Scott's encyclopedic knowledge of cutting-edge technology, advanced military systems, the next generation of magical machinery that you and I pay for, but will probably never get to see. How does it work? And how might it be used against us? Aviation writer Bill Scott will give us the lowdown on what's flying around up there, way up there. What about these so-called rods from the gods, hypervelocity weapons? And who's flying these gigantic black triangles? I want to ask him about that. And what's causing the skyquakes being heard on the West Coast? He will also delve into the very plausible scenarios that could lead our country into some very sticky wickets in the not-too-distant future, like tomorrow. We'll take our break, get it out of the way, come back and palaver about some of the bits and pieces we've harvested from news sources over the past couple of days. Then Chuck Zukowski joins me to talk about mutilations. Stay with us. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Thanks for being with us on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp, the other George, the Vegas George, filling in for George Norrie, who is off tonight. Our webmaster, Lex, has posted assorted items of interest, at least I hope they're of interest to you, under the banner Knapp's News on the Coast to Coast website. One story from New Scientist is appropriate, considering that Bill Scott will be with us later in the second hour. It's about these far-out technologies, ways to traverse deep space. I guess there are those who believe we've already mastered some of these futuristic technologies and just aren't talking about them, publicly anyway. Examples, ion thrusters. Don't ask me to tell you how that works. Nuclear pulse propulsion, beam-powered propulsion, and solar sails. If you're into science or even science fiction, you might want to take a peek at the New Scientist article we posted. And if gadgets are your thing, we got a couple of videos which I borrowed from various places on the internet. If you ever had a hankering to fly in the greatest airplane ever built, I'm talking about the SR-71 Blackbird. This might be the next best thing. It's a model of a Blackbird, I mean, but it's big, and it really flies well under remote control. I'm not sure if you can buy one or not, but we've got a clip of one in action. And some of you might have been listening when I had Bob Lazar on the program a couple of weeks ago. Bob is the guy whose claims put Area 51 on the map and on the tongues of people all over the world. As he told us, he is now living in Michigan, where he runs a storefront business called United Nuclear. It's also an online business selling hard-to-get lab equipment, chemicals, and assorted gadgets. And if you know Bob, you know he has sort of an evil scientist bent to him at times. He's built something that he markets as a death ray. And you're not able to see my air quotes around death ray. I mean, not really a death ray, but it can do some damage. And I've got a link to Bob's page where you can take a video tour of his shop and then check out this death ray in action. It carves up a hot dog in a way that that made me wince, and I don't need to explain that any further. Also, someone sent this link to me the other day. It's a link to U-Haul, the moving company, which has a very detailed spot on its corporate website devoted to, of all things, Area 51. It looks like they borrowed a bit of material themselves from many of the stories that I and others have written about this secret, I should say formerly secret base. But it's a pretty cool resource, especially coming from U-Haul, which you wouldn't think would be that into this stuff. Two other items of note. One is the latest deep space photos captured by the Hubble. Some stunning images for you to examine. And then lastly, you know, many of us are familiar with the farewell address that President Eisenhower gave when he left the presidency. He warned about the dangers of the military-industrial complex and advised the public to keep an eye on those guys. Turns out Harry Truman, President Truman, also issued a warning. Now, his didn't come out until the early 60s, long after he'd left office, but he was worried about something he had created, and that something was the CIA. Remember, CIA came into existence in 1947, coincidentally the same year as the Roswell incident. I'm not saying there's a connection. Truman wrote in his editorial that he really felt he needed straightforward intelligence and an agency that could go out and get it. But he was worried by what the CIA had become, getting involved in all sorts of intrigues, coups, assassinations, planned invasions. So he wrote this editorial that was published in 1963, in which he basically warned that CIA was getting out of hand and advised that maybe it should be broken up into a couple of pieces. Of course, that didn't happen, and today CIA is far more powerful than Truman could ever have envisioned. And I thought you might want to read his original piece. It's not too long, and Lex has posted it on the Coast website. You want to check it out or maybe even save it. I mentioned Sunday night about a planned massive roundup of wild horses that was to get underway Monday here in Nevada. Well, it did. And contrary to promises from the BLM that everything would be transparent, they found a spot on private land to use as their staging point for this thing, as their operations center, which means the press and the public were excluded, except for some planned staged little side trips where they're going to be accompanied by chaperones and kept away from the action. And I told you there's going to be a big stink about this roundup and others that are in the works, and it really is gaining steam right now. A lot of calls and emails, congressional staffs, and to the White House underway, protests held in Las Vegas. One is planned for San Francisco, another one tomorrow near Denver. Calls for halts to these roundups from folks as diverse as Willie Nelson and Sheryl Crow. Now, whether you're interested in the welfare of wild horses or not, if you're a taxpayer, then this program is of interest to you. It is terribly mismanaged, very expensive. They spend public money hand over fist rounding up these Mustangs for shaky reasons and then feeding them for the rest of their lives, years and years, at a cost of tens of millions of dollars per year. And it's a travesty. And I think if the general public, I hope that the general public is starting to wake up to what's been happening. I think we can expect to hear a lot more about this in the coming months. And one other story. I don't know if you saw this one, but it appears that these crazed mullahs who run the government of Iran are secretly negotiating to buy a huge shipment of purified uranium, 1,350 tons of purified uranium ore from the government of Kazakhstan. This information comes from the International Atomic Energy Agency, and neither of the two governments is admitting it, as far as I know, but this agency says any such transfer of uranium yellow cake would be a clear violation of international law. And I sure don't put it past the wacky Iranians, who are starting to look pretty desperate as they try to keep a lid on growing unrest in their own country. But what is the deal with Kazakhstan? I mean, our government, our country has been kissing their butt for a long time, trying to help them become a legitimate nation. Lots of aid going to that country from here, lots of business investment coming from here to there. And I'm guessing there are some serious come-to-Jesus chats underway behind the scenes right now, or at least I sure hope someone is giving the Kazakhs the facts of life. Maybe Ambassador Borat will explain that it's all been a terrible misunderstanding. I want to jump right now into the bizarre news about a rash of animal mutilations in the San Luis Valley. As I mentioned, Chuck Zukowski is a deputy sheriff, but he's been involved in as a certified MUFON investigator, field investigator, for a long time. He was a state section director. And I don't know, Chuck, are you there?
Yeah, good evening and good morning to some of your listeners.
Hey, thanks for being with us. Is this just kind of a coincidence that you're living in the Colorado when this new rash of mutilations happens?
Oh, I don't know if it's a coincidence or just my dumb luck.
Well,
it's a lot of work.
Take it from the top. I mean, this has been a hot spot for this stuff for a long time. I guess it ebbs and flows at different times, and now it looks like it's flowing again. So you've looked at five cases this year. How did you get called into it?
Well, actually, the very first case, which was back in March 8th, the Duran case, I actually saw that on the news first. It was just a report. And then I backtracked through the local news agency, through the reporter, got a hold of the rancher, and then took a team down there. I was down there probably within about 4 days after the mutilation, was taking place. That went out to the media, and my name went out on some local newspapers. And then, so the second mutilation occurred on the 17th. Then because my name was in the paper from doing the Duran case, I was contacted on that just by the rancher, and then another one on the 20th. And so we had three, back-to-back-to-back March of this year. And then come November, the week before Thanksgiving, we had a fourth. And then on December 7th, Pearl Harbor Day, we had the fifth.
Are there more of them out there that are happening that are not being reported? I've dealt with ranchers over the years. It's a very touchy subject for them, so I would imagine there could be even more of these that no one's hearing about.
Well, absolutely. The Duran case, the very first case that I did this year, supposedly there was a one that occurred about a week before. The Miller case, which was a week or so later, the calf, what was interesting is I talked with the rancher's neighbor briefly. And a couple days before this rancher lost his calf, the rancher down the street lost its dog. All four paws were removed from the animal. And unfortunately, I didn't get any pictures of that because, it had already been a few days after the fact and they, disposed of the carcass. So, we've had not only the cows, we have a report of a dog also within the time frame of the March period.
Give us the big picture of the evidence that you're finding, the circumstances surrounding these incidents, the kind of condition that the animals were in. I guess similarities and differences, but starting with similarities.
Well, what was kind of interesting was, three out of the five, basic udder removed and the vaginal area removed. Two out of the five are calves. The whole center section of the calf was removed. The chest cavity cored out. The bones picked clean. All this you can see pictures on the website if you go to my website. What was interesting about the calves, the Miller calf, the ears were taken off. Very unusual. It's the first time I've seen that, from other reports, both sides. Now, the calf that I investigated on, I guess it was the 7th or so, the tongue was removed out of that one. So the similarity of the two calves were the whole center section was missing. The one in March, the ears were gone, the tongue was there. The one in November, the ears were there and the tongue was gone. So kind of interesting. The other two animals, or other three animals, were larger, obviously. The last one I just did on December 12th was roughly 4 years old and around 900 pounds or so. And the udder was missing, the tongue was missing, and the left side of the face where the eye is, probably a good 8 to 10 centimeter section, was cored out right down the bone. And out of all five cases, what I've done, what I like to do is, I hit all the cases at first when I first see the animal. I'll hit them with a Geiger counter looking for any trace evidence of radiation. And then I also hit it with a tri-field meter. I have a natural tri-field EMF meter. And all five animals, I picked up roughly around 10 microteslas, 8 to 10 microteslas on it. But on the last one, the one on the 12th, where the part of the face was missing, and right down to the bone was clean. When I went over that with my EMF meter, it pegged. I was getting more than 100 microteslas, and the Earth is 50 microteslas. So this is really interesting. I'm not quite sure. You know, I've talked to a representative from Colorado State University about this. Of course, you know, the vets down there, they normally don't use electromagnetic, you know, frequency meters on animals that, you know, they're doing necropsies on. So this is kind of new to them. But there should be no reason why we're picking up such a large magnetic field from an animal. And all the animals I hit with a metal detector, also that's part of my, you know, field investigation to make sure that there's no metal inside. And obviously, this particular case on the 12th, we made sure there was no metal. We weren't picking anything up. So, you know, it's a good theory that maybe there's, you know, evidence of some type of a magnetic field that was left behind. You know, I really can't explain it at this point. We're still kind of looking at it and theorizing it, and you know, we'll get together after the holidays and reconvene on this and try and figure out what's going on.
You know, I've heard the speculation, and I've seen it on your website. People wonder if maybe there was some sort of tracking device on these animals, that they weren't picked by random, that there was a tracking device that allowed them to be located by whoever might be responsible for this, and then the mutilation takes place in part to get rid of whatever the device was.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And one of the things that we were looking for at first, you know, we were trying to figure out, and this goes back a few years, you know, when we're following all the different types of mutilation cases, of why do they randomly pick one, or do they pick one? Are they using some type of a FLIR device looking for animals that may be, you know, a little above or below temperature? The cases, out of the five cases, two of the cases I hit with a ultraviolet light, or, you know, a black light, looking for any evidence of fluorescent markings. And so, you know, we're trying to figure out, you know, are they picking them at randomly at the time, or are they coming back after an animal that they picked previously? And so my theory on the last one is, you know, since I'm picking up such a large electromagnetic frequency, it could be just residue of something that maybe might have, you know, been implanted in there. And why take off, you know, half of the face to get into it? I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Okay, it's five cows. Is that five different ranches, or were some of the ranchers hit more than once?
Well, these five cows are from five separate ranches. The Sanchez mutilation that occurred a week before Thanksgiving, and the Sanchez came out, really, it went out AP on Thanksgiving Day. He lost four calves within about a three-week period. He found the first two, and, you know, obviously, you know, it scared him, and he called the local deputies, and then he found the third one a week later, and then the fourth one a week later, and he didn't think he was getting, you know, very much help from the local deputies, and really, honestly, there's not too much they can do. So his daughter, who lives in Denver, started getting on the internet and found my name and contacted me. And I shot right down there to see that one. But he lost four within about a 3.5 week period. Out of the other four ranchers, three were previously hit before within the last 10 years. And one of them had just purchased a ranch within the last couple of years. And we didn't have any information from the previous owner, so we couldn't tell.
You know, these ranchers don't operate as a high profit margin business. I mean, they're often operating on the edge. The loss of four animals, that's a big loss for that guy.
Absolutely. The last two ones, investigations I've done, the Aaron and the Sanchez, they maybe had, you know, 30, 35 head of cattle. This is, you know, it's very, very minimal. It's a great loss to them to lose one animal. And no, they don't carry insurance on these animals. Matter of fact, the Sanchez one, he was so distraught over losing four cows in 3.5 weeks, or calves, that the remaining calves he had, the day after I did my investigation, he took them down to the auction and got rid of them. He was afraid that he'd lose, you know, more calves, so he auctioned those off. Out of all five investigations I've done, only the Guerin case was really a professional incorporated, entity or, you know, type of a business. The rest were pretty much, you know, small time.
Now, I imagine, I don't know, I've read some of what's on your website, but it sounds like these cases are very similar to cases reported all over the world in that there are no tracks, there's no cause of death, no immediate indication of who could have done this. We're going to take a break when we come back in our conversation with Chuck Zukowski. We'll get into who could be behind it and whether or not predators could explain this. Stay with us on Coast to Coast AM. Coming up at the top of the hour, I'll be joined by an extraordinary aviation writer, Bill Scott, to talk about his new book, Counterspace, The Next Hours of World War III. But at this moment, we're talking with Chuck Zukowski about a rash of cattle mutilations in the San Luis Valley of Colorado. Could it be Satanists? Could it be predators, coyotes? I don't think so. And you'll understand why when we come back and ask him for a few more details about the cases he's investigated, and we'll open up the phone lines for a couple of your questions, so don't go away. This is Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Chuck Zukowski about a rash and outbreak of cattle mutilations in the San Luis Valley of Colorado. Chuck, you go out, you investigate five of these, you're on the ground, you meet the ranchers. What is their attitude when you get to the property? Confused, scared, angry, all the above?
Pretty much all of the above. And something before your break that you mentioned, you know, we look into questions about predators and, you know, any type of cults. On my website, I actually have a video of the last mutilation case I did on December 12th. It's called the Aaron Cattle Mutilation. And on the little video that's on my website, you can hear me ask the rancher, have you seen any mountain lions? What type of predators? And I also asked him about, you know, Satanist cults. And it's kind of interesting. I said, what type of predator could take an animal down this size? And he says, not any predator that I would know of, except maybe a human. But he says, so it's very puzzling. These guys at least have 40 years ranching experience, you know. So, you know, we're looking well over 250 years worth of ranching experience between all five of these guys that I've investigated this year.
What about the nature of the cuts, though? The nature of the cuts would suggest that it's not a predator. Predators bite and chew and tear, don't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. And these are very clean cuts. Even though I took samples down in March to Colorado State University, and I had samples ready from this last one, but they were just too contaminated to get really good results. They could not come out and publicly say whether or not, you know, how these cuts were done, but there is so much excitement coming out of the lab there that they want to see either an animal come into their lab so they can do necropsy on site, or they'll hopefully come out with me, one of the representatives there, and do necropsy actually on the site. So we're pretty excited about that. We're kind of waiting for the prime or the premium type of investigation that I can get out there within 36 hours. So we can get the bull, you know, basically the best lab analysis we can with the animal we have.
I know your website, UFONut.com. We've got a link to it on Coast to Coast website. The UFO nut part of it, I think you're poking fun at yourself, but, you know, you don't want to make that leap, do you? You don't want to assume, as many people have in the past, that these mutilations are being carried out by space aliens, because I would imagine that the evidence does not quite lead there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've been married, oh, geez, you know, over 28 years. I shouldn't say, oh, geez, happily married for 28 years. And I've been investigating UFOs ever since. And when I first started, people were calling me crazy and a nut. So I kind of went, you know, with that and put on my license plates and then started a website with it. But this is very, very serious. These are actual, you know, criminal cases. Matter of fact, all five of them had a criminal case associated with it and logged with it. We take this very serious, and obviously the ranchers, it's a lot out of pocket for them too, especially when they don't have any insurance on it.
Did the ranchers indicate how this was done, or whether they heard any noises? Were there helicopters? Were there lights in the skies? Any tire tracks? Any strangers in the area?
And that's where, you know, the UFO part comes in for me is you know, doing previous investigations. That's one of the questions I always ask, you know, unmarked helicopters, any unusual people in the area. I mean, that would be the cop thing coming out from me. And really, out of all five of them, two had the Duran case, very beginning of March, had seen strange lights in the sky a couple of days previous. And the Sanchez case back in July had actually seen strange lights probably within about a 20-day period, almost to the beginning of August. And I checked that light out. It wasn't anything that was, associated with stars or planets. Just you know, it was just traveling over the top of the hills. Now, what's interesting about the Miller case, though, I got to try and keep these in line here. The Miller case that happened back in March, the same night that the Miller case occurred, which I didn't know about at the time, not until the next day, I had a UFO investigation on a black triangle flying over Colorado Springs. Coming from that direction, it's a good 100 and so miles as a crow flies away from Colorado Springs, but it's coming from that location. So for me, that was a pretty good coincidence that we had something flying over coming from that direction the same night of the cattle mutilation. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're aliens. Generally, on my website and people I talk to, I call them unknown deaths, and until I actually see an alien doing something like this, I really can't say, or unless I have some type of evidence pointing to something that's not from this planet. So at this point, we log them as unknown deaths.
Some guys I've worked with here in Las Vegas, NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Science, Bigelow people, that NIDS is no longer in existence, but some of those folks are still working on these mysteries. They went out on a lot of scenes, mutilation scenes all over the West, and looked into it, and they became to believe that there were two tracks of these mutilations. One that was genuinely unknown, being carried out by unknown entities, if you want to call it that, and then others that seemed to be clearly being done by humans, because some of the clues that were left behind, as if they were tracking something through the food chain, or call it radiation, or a mad cow, or something like that. Any guesses on that?
Well, it was interesting. Since a lot of this stuff had gone public, and I've got a lot of responses from pretty much all over the world, I've got some responses from people in Canada tracking mutilations there, responses from the UK. I had an email from a gentleman out of the Dominican Republic that this was happening to a herd of goats, and there was probably about 15, 16 goats, and then randomly all over the U.S. So, at one point there was a theory, because we did above-ground atomic testing in the Alamosa, areas, and where they were looking for nuclear fallout and all kinds. But there's no pattern at this point with the mutilations to, possible fallout, because it seems to me that it's very sporadic. And, it's getting really interesting. It's kind of gone from one theory where I thought, that could be a very plausible theory, but now it's to the point where no, someone or something is really interested in these animals, and for whatever reason, they're doing some type of analysis with the pieces that they're taking. And in the cases with the calves, they become very, very destructive, where they're taking pretty much, 80% of the animal. It's just, I haven't seen that before.
Be interesting to see if it slows down or goes away until after winter. I mean, in the dead of winter, it's a lot harder to move around, say, in a helicopter or something else, a lot harder to not leave tracks.
The interesting thing was that December 12th was actually my birthday, and so that was the fifth mutilation I did was on my birthday.
Well, what a happy birthday that was.
Thanks. But we had minus degrees. We were in the area where the animal was mutilated. It was at least minus 6 degrees out there. The day that I went out on the 12th, if you kind of watch the video, we're cold, and I'm sniffing, and it's probably upper 20s. I don't even think it hit 30 degrees. The animal was still partly frozen. So the conditions weren't anything that you'd want to be in anyway to do something like that, at least from a human standpoint. Very, very cold out there, and that was the last one. And I was really surprised, because you kind of think, is this weather related? Obviously not. They happen when it's warm outside, and then they happen when you have sub-zero degree weather.
Chuck, we're going to take a couple of calls east of the Rockies. Werner in Canada. Hi, Werner. Hello?
I've been farming here for 40 years here in New Brunswick in eastern Canada.
Uh-huh.
And over the last 14 years, there have been 280 head of cattle killed on my farm. And I have it well documented, and it rules out UFOs and aliens. It's just plain criminal. Some of them are in the military. Some of them, they're the next-door neighbors. And in most of the cases, they're directional energy beams, different type of lasers or microwave beams have been used to burn holes right into the animals. And what's especially deadly is the use of very specific frequencies where they modify the atmospheric air and change the oxygen into ozone and oxidize the nitrogen.
Hey, Werner, let's slow down here for a second and back up. You said 280 animals in the last 14 years?
Yes.
Has there been any official investigation by your government up there? Has it
the
made
last
it into...
word I had from the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, was, we won't investigate.
Did they give any explanation for that?
Their stand is things like that don't happen in New Brunswick because they have made so many wrong turns and cover-up over the last 35 years where they even put farmers into mental institutions because the farmers were passionate and they wanted to shut them up.
Werner, how many of these animals belong to you?
Those were all my animals.
They were all yours.
And I had a breeding. I have a breeding herd of anywhere between over the last years between 60 and 70 cows.
Chuck, any comments?
Wow, that's really bizarre. And the specimens that we had, we never were able to pick up anything that looked like it was cauterized, although it looked like it was probably antemortem. The cuts that were, you know, initiated on the animals themselves. Now, out here in, I can't speak for Canada, but out here in the U.S., I do know that the deputies and law enforcement in Colorado, probably about a decade or so ago, met down in the San Luis Valley for a training seminar on cattle mutilations to try and get a hold of what's going on. And I've spoke with the deputies at least on three of the cases that I've done. And, you know, they're very active with criminal case reports on them and trying to understand what's going on. So, you know, I'm sorry to hear that the Royal Mounted Police, you know, won't take this any further. Geez, you know, it almost sounds, conspiracy.
Hey, Werner, why don't you send me an email? Send me an email and or one to Chuck, and we'll be in touch. I'd like to learn a little bit more about this. If there are 280 animals that have been lost, that's a pretty big story.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thanks, Werner. Thanks for the call. First-time caller, Ed in Illinois. Hi, Ed.
Hi, George. I've talked to you before, but on the telephone at your station there in Las Vegas. It's been quite a while back. But I just wonder if Chuck has ever... been down to Dulce, New Mexico, and talked with Manuel Gomez. That name familiar to you, Chuck?
You know, it sounds familiar. Matter of fact, I just kind of drove through Dulce just yesterday. I'm actually talking from Huntington Beach, California. I'm visiting some relatives over here.
Well, Gomez
familiar,
can't
but
wait.
We have had some issues in the Dulce area.
Yeah, the Gomez family has been on this ranch for years. I don't remember if it was a homestead or a land grant from the Crown of Spain, but they've been there for eons. And they have a general store there in Dulce. And somebody has put Manuel out of the cattle business, and he thinks it's the government. He lost several cows, surgically mutilated. The fish and game people said, oh, it's predators. Well, predators go to the gut, not to the genitalia. And they don't make surgical cuts. And people have been seeing spaceships with a circle of flashing colored lights. And he set out one night, and here came this spaceship. And when it got close enough, he heard the rotor. And, you know, you can't miss that sound. And the light beamed straight down, like people have been talking about. And down came one of his steers on a cable, apparently. And when the thing left, well, he went out and looked, and it had been mutilated. But he finally just got out of the business. in my opinion, there, Manuel's Ranch borders an Indian reservation. And from what I've been able to find out, there's one of these electronic mind control plus other weird things that the government does, one of these underground facilities there.
Sounded like you were describing a helicopter disguised as a spaceship.
Absolutely.
Just to scare people, which is, you know, I've heard that discussed before. Why, if the government's doing it or some corporation, why would they leave the remains behind? Well, maybe it's a fear thing to scare the heck out of people.
Well, that's it. And, George, not only that, but they've tapped his landline. I say they. He doesn't know who it is for sure. They've listened in to cell phone conversations and just all kinds of things. And he's, you know, this has been on television too. And I have a family connection there where I've got some of my information. I used to live in Albuquerque. And they finally he said, no more, got rid of his cattle. But he's not going to budge. He's not going to leave the ranch. He knows that somebody is wanting to chase him off that ranch so it can be taken over by it.
You know, it seems like it'd be easier to buy it.
What's interesting is, you know, some of the Roswell investigations that I've done in the past has pointed me back towards 47, you know, when the CIA and the Air Force and the NSA and anyway, the National Disinformation Act was also created back in the late 40s, where, you know, you add a little bit of truth and a lot of untruth. And the mutilation cases that I've done this year, one of the things obviously I ask is, you know, anybody, you know, unusual in the area, someone, you know, new or, you know, military. And in the last couple, it hasn't been the case because it's such a close-knit society that they would definitely see anybody that was out of the ordinary or coming in. So I'm wondering in certain cases whether or not, you know, you might have someone out there copycatting to, you know, to throw a lot of disinformation into what might really be going on too. Now, I'm not pointing back saying it's alien or not, but, you know, you have to look at all different sides and see whether or not the military is doing something to throw a lot of disinformation to this also.
Sure. I mean, let's face it. If you make it seem like it's aliens, if you make it seem goofy and weird, it almost guarantees there'll be no official investigation, no government agency is going to go after it. Law enforcement would shy away. Maybe individual deputies or officers would be interested, but officially there would be a lack of interest because it seems so weird. You know, the major media might do a sweep story here and there, but that there would be no 60 Minutes investigation of it because it's too darn weird.
Absolutely. And we also have to worry about the giggle factor from the media, too. You know, they always throw a little joke in afterwards. And this is pretty serious business. But at least from, you know, the San Luis area for the last two that I've done within November, December. San Luis is actually the oldest town in Colorado. Very, very small, very, very tight, basically Hispanic community. And they would know if anybody, matter of fact, as soon as I came in there, they pegged me right off as you know, who's this unusual person coming in? So we kind of have an idea that maybe the cases coming from the San Luis, at least the last couple, may not be military-oriented since they haven't seen anything that pertains to any type of military connection.
Well, we had a friend, Chris O'Brien, whom we've had on the program before, who's written a couple of books about the San Luis Valley, not only mutilations, but a heck of a lot of other weirdness that seems to surround those phenomena and things like that. Chuck, I appreciate you being on the show. Hope you'll keep us in the loop if you come up with some more information. And folks, you can check out the link to Chuck's website. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by aviation writer Bill Scott to talk about his new book, Counterspace. Stay with us, everyone, on Coast to Coast AM.